Chapter 25. Achilles and Patroclus. When he was younger, he was a girl. His mother told him it was an act, that to keep himself safe, he had to grow out his hair and wear dresses and to answer to a different name. He likes his name, so he hadn't liked that part. But everything else? Well, that was fine. He liked being a boy, but he liked being a girl, too. Liked it when merchants called him Little Miss, when women admired his soft skin and shiny hair. Liked how pretty he was. Felt more at ease dyeing yarn with the women than thinks he ever would running with the boys. But sometimes he did want to run with them. Sometimes he liked the trimness of his waist and how broad his shoulders were. Liked the way he filled out his favorite dresses, even when his mother told him it made him look too much like a boy, and to pick another. It was not quite either, and yet both. And when he tried to untangle it, he just gave himself a headache, so he stopped. He didn't like the fake name, and being called She never really felt right, even though he adored it when people called him Miss or Lady or Ma'am. Achilles decides, around the time he's a teenager, that it doesn't make a difference who he is, and that's all that matters. It's not long after this that pretty much everything else he thought he knew gets thrown into chaos. His mother always said that they were hiding. It never occurred to him to wonder what it was they were hiding from.
"You have the hand of destiny upon you," Zeus bellows, looming over him with skin like copper and eyes like grave soil.
Achilles thinks he mostly has the village's eyes on him, since Zeus had triumphantly stripped him in the middle of the village square, which Achilles had thought to be rather unnecessary. Everyone thought he was a girl, and knew he had a penis, so he's not really sure what Zeus was trying to prove. Now he's just naked and cold.
"You will turn the tides of war. The heavens have foretold it," Zeus proclaims.
He says. "I think you have the wrong person." He's been raised as a girl his whole life. The only weapon he knows how to wield is a knife, and only then in the kitchen.
"I do not," Zeus says. "If you do not fight, the world will be forced into ruin."
Achilles really doesn't see how the world is his problem.
"If you do not fight,"
the king of the gods continues, lower, more menacing than he feels is really necessary,
"then Patroclus will suffer a horrible fate caused by your inaction."
When Achilles is 13, a young man arrives, dark skin and hair and eyes. He bows before his mother and says he's been sent to serve them by Achilles' father, Peleus. Achilles knows he has a father, of course, but he can't remember him. "What crime have you committed?" Thetis asks contemptuously. "I know a punishment when I see it." Patroclus doesn't answer. "Fine," his mother says. "You belong to my son now." She walks away, but Achilles stays behind. His hair is long, and one of the older girls had braided flowers into it. His dress is dirty, though, and that doesn't normally bother him. But he's not normally in front of people who look like Patroclus. He's been wondering if he actually liked boys, or if he was just getting caught up with all his girlfriends who liked boys, and talked about it all the time. Good to know he absolutely, definitely likes boys.
"Lord Achilles," the man says, getting on bended knee in front of him, I am yours to command.
He wrinkles his nose and adjusts the straps of his dress, more out of something to do with his hands than anything else.
I'm a lady, he says, then crosses his arms and puts his nose in the air. Follow me, then. You'll help me and mother mix the dyes.
Patroclus doesn't say anything at all, but Achilles can feel the man's presence at his back. Things are different after that. Thetis refuses to acknowledge Patroclus's existence, so it is Achilles who gives the orders, who tells him to help carry the baskets of yarn, who tells him to gather the berries they need to make the dye. He's mostly silent, but sometimes Achilles catches a hint of what he thinks might be a smile. Years pass, and Patroclus is always there. When they spend days by the river, they'll talk of the village, of the customers, of anything and everything they can think of. Patroclus still refuses to speak in Thetis's presence, but outside of it, he's warm and easy and has a smile like the rising sun. Achilles is 16, and his days are what they have always been. His mother's sternness, dyeing and weaving clothes to sell, running wild throughout the village with his friends. And Patroclus, there to witness it all, to smile at him and offer his arm for Achilles to steady himself on when they walk down steep hills, solid and there.
Your bodyguard doesn't talk much, one of his friends remarks one day, curiosity making her eyes sparkle.
Who? He says. Then looks behind him to where Patroclus follows a half dozen steps behind. Achilles has tried to get him to keep pace with them before, but it never sticks.
He's not my bodyguard.
She looks at him as if he's slow.
He's a warrior that spends his day doing what you tell him to do. He's not a servant. He's choosing to listen to you.
Is he a warrior? He's built like one, certainly, but Achilles has never seen him take up a weapon.
Mother said he was sent here as a punishment.
Some punishment, she snorts. He looks at you like you're his salvation. You might want to do something about that. He pretends to misunderstand her and changes the subject. She sighs and lets him, but she's not fooled. Patroclus is still as achingly handsome as he was 3 years ago. Achilles has grown up, isn't a kid anymore. He knows he's beautiful. He knows by the glances and comments of the men and women around him that he's beautiful. But Patroclus has never called him beautiful, has always just been his companion, his friend, his confidant. Achilles doesn't think he's willing to lose that. Not just on a chance he could get something different. Patroclus is too precious to gamble away on hope. Achilles isn't inclined to believe the words of a man who strips him in front of his village and makes grand proclamations in lieu of simple conversation. But he is king of the gods, so he can't really be dismissed either. He does what he promised Patroclus he wouldn't do. He leaves the village. His mother is weeping and his friends wring their hands, a fear in all their faces that he feels but does his best not to show. He has to know. He has to be sure. It takes him 4 days to travel to the nearest great temple dedicated to Apollo. He waits until the moon is high in the sky, until Apollo won't be busy harnessing the sun. He walks into the temple, looks at the statues, the offerings, the smoldering candles belonging to holy men who spent all day sitting and praying, waiting for a sign. Achilles doesn't have time for that. He places his hand on his hip and looks up at the ceiling. So, is it true or not? If you want me to do something, you're going to have to tell me yourself.
You are impudent, Lady Achilles. A voice like Melody says in his ear, and he whirls around. Apollo stands in front of him, golden and bright, like he's swallowed the sun instead of simply mastered it. Achilles considers bowing, but decides that gods have caused him too much trouble to be worth the trouble. Is it true? If I stay out of the war, will Patroclus die? The god of prophecy says nothing for a long moment. Then he sighs and sits, looking more like an old man than an all-powerful being. If you attempt to stay out of the war's path, Patroclus will have a much more difficult time, a much more painful time. But all things must die, Achilles. I'm not Hades, and I can't tell you in what manner Patroclus will make his end. But your lives are linked, and the direction his life takes depends on the choices you make. Well, fuck. What am I supposed to do? He demands. I was raised as a woman. I cannot fight. I'm not strong. I know nothing of battle. Am I meant simply to go out there and die?
No, Apollo says. You are not meant to die.
The baker's son has strong hands and kind eyes. He finds Achilles enchanting and tells him so, pushing warm bread into his arms and looking at his lips. Achilles' heart threatens to beat outside his chest, and he's very beautiful, but he's never done. This is new to him. But he takes the bread and licks his lips and comes back. Again and again and again, every time letting the baker's son touch him a little more, kiss him a little harder. This last time, Patroclus scowls and looks irritable and uneasy for the first time Achilles has known him. "What's wrong?" he asks, confused. He looks around them, but can see nothing out of the ordinary. Nothing so horrible as to put that look on his best friend's face.
He takes too many liberties with you, Lady Achilles, he says, glaring.
It takes him a long moment to figure out what he's talking about, and he blushes. He only takes the liberties that I allow him to, he says. He reaches out and grabs Patroclus's hand in his own, threading their fingers together. Come on, you're just in a mood. Let's go swim in the river together. Patroclus's scowl lessens, but not as much as he thought it would. It takes him months to find the entrance to the underworld. He complains, loudly, at every shrine to Apollo he comes across, that maybe a lift or even some directions would have been really useful. But the god doesn't appear again. There's a shiver over his skin as he passes from the mortal realm to a place not quite that, and not quite the underworld either. The river Styx rushes in front of him, the stream so fast that stepping foot in it and not getting swept away would seem an impossible task, even if it were a normal river. It's not a normal river. It's so much more dangerous. Its waters are black, churning with gray foam, and he knows the stories. Everyone knows the stories. No one can touch its waters and live to tell about it. The river Styx keeps what it takes. But he can't fight this war as he is. He needs strength, needs power, and he doesn't have the time to get it through normal channels. He doesn't have time to train and fight and learn. Patroclus needs him. Achilles needs the power to protect him now. He takes a deep breath, wondering if it will help, and prepares to jump into the river.
Don't!
Achilles startles and looks up. A little girl stands beside him. Black skin and gray hair and eyes.
It will kill you. If it doesn't, I'll be invincible, he says. She shakes her head. It will kill you. There's no if. There is only death. But not even that. Death isn't so bad. Death comes for us all. What my river offers isn't death. It's an ending.
They say someone did it once, he says. They say someone bathed in the water and lived, that they became an unstoppable warrior.
That did happen once, but the price they paid was too big. You don't want to pay it, she says. Don't do this. Go home and face whatever death awaits for you. Don't hasten past it to something worse in my river.
Achilles goes to one knee so that she can look down at him instead of the other way around. Please, I love him. If I can save him, I'll pay any price, and I'll do it gladly. I won't regret it.
She's crying now, and he reaches up to brush her tears away. His skin is left blistering and peeling where they touched him, and she grabs his hand in between her own, soothing his hurt skin. I know you won't. That's why it's so sad.
I don't understand, he says. Are you going to help me?
Yes, it's a horrible, terrible idea, but I'll help you.
The waters of her river calm and still, as they're never meant to do.
Bathe in my river, and if you live, you will be invulnerable. You'll have the strength of 10 men. You will have the power to turn the tides of a war.
What's the price that I'll pay? He asks, but he's already taking off his clothes, already preparing to enter the river of the underworld. Styx is still crying.
I can't tell you. You'll know when it's time.
He shrugs and jumps, slipping beneath the surface of the river. As still and shining as obsidian. The pain is excruciating and immediate. He screams before he can think not to, and the river of the Styx flows down his throat, gets caught in his lungs, is in him and on him. It's burning him away, and when he manages to surface again, he realizes he really has been burned, has been eaten away. He looks down at his hands and their bone. All his flesh gone. Then the river dissolves his eyes and he can see nothing, can barely feel. And it must be magic that keeps his bones in place, because there's nothing left of him to do it. A child's hands pull him to shore, and he's nothing but bones now. He doesn't know how he can fight a war like this. But then he has the uncomfortable and painful sensation of his flesh growing back, which is clearly something no one was ever meant to experience. It feels like 1,000 white-hot coals being rubbed all over him, and he's screaming as soon as he has enough of a throat that he can manage it. He doesn't know how long it takes. Minutes, hours, days, years. But when it's done, the river is flowing again. He's lying on the bank of it. Naked and shivering, his flesh new and different. He can already tell it feels different. The goddess Persephone stands above him, her hand still faintly glowing with power.
No blade can pierce you now. No fire can burn you. No shield may stop you. You are both the shield and sword. Wield yourself well, Lady Achilles.
She bends down to kiss his forehead. Her lips feel like fire. And then she's gone. Styx is kneeling by her river, and silent sobs rack her frame, her shoulders hunched and shaking.
Why are you crying? He asks, forcing himself to have the energy to lift his arm.
This time when he brushes her tears away, they do not burn him.
You helped me, just as I asked. And now I have what I wanted.
She shakes her head and is gone the next moment. He can't see her, but her voice echoes out from all around him.
What my river takes, it keeps. Achilles is 17, stumbling home from a night spent with a silk trader with large hands and a plump mouth. He nearly falls on his face, but something grabs his arm, jerking him upright. It takes several seconds of him blinking in confusion for the face in front of him to swim into focus. "Patroclus," he says, and takes a step closer so they're pressed chest to chest. "What are you doing here?"
"You're drunk," his friend accuses, fingers like a vice around his arm. "You have to be more careful."
He's drunk and young and beautiful, and it makes him reckless. He twists himself out of Patroclus's grip, only to push them even closer together, looping his arms around Patroclus's neck.
"Why, you'll keep me safe, won't you?"
"I can't always be by your side, my lady," Patroclus says, low and a sorrow on his face that Achilles doesn't like.
He presses a quick, delicate kiss along Patroclus's cheekbone, because now is not the time, but he can't help himself.
"Yeah, you can."
They walk home together, arm in arm, and Achilles pretends they're more than a maybe, more than a possibility. He pretends like they're an inevitability and smiles the whole way. Achilles throws himself into the war, fighting his way across the battlefield, fighting his way to the only person who matters. Rumors of him spread fast and quickly. They say he has the hand of Ares on him, that Athena has blessed him with a prowess in battle, that she's granted no other. He doesn't know if that's true. He just knows that he must keep fighting or risk not getting there in time. Risk not being where he needs to be when he needs to be there. He reaches the front lines just in time to see Patroclus about to be overwhelmed by three soldiers on top of him, and Achilles doesn't hesitate. He throws himself in there, pushing Patroclus onto the ground and shielding his body with his own, leaning on his elbows so he can look down at him.
"No!" Patroclus shouts, his eyes wide with horror.
Their enemies' swords fall upon Achilles' back, gleaming in the rising sun. Nothing happens. "I told you not to die," Achilles says. "I said don't die, and this is what I find?" The soldiers are confused and rain more blows down upon Achilles, each of which bounces off of him like it's nothing. Patroclus is covered with blood. Most of it is not his own. And Achilles can't help but want him anyway. It's been too long since he saw him last.
"I told you not to leave the village."
"I guess we're both promise breakers then," he says, and jumps to his feet. He takes a sword from one of them and kills them all in the next few blows. He's a mediocre swordsman, his skill cobbled together from his past few weeks on the battlefield. Luckily, even his mediocre skills are impressive when you can't be harmed and have the strength of 10 men. "Stay behind me," he warns, lifting his stolen sword in front of him. "It looks like it's my turn to protect you." Let more warriors come for them. 100, 1,000, it doesn't matter. He'll fight them all to keep Patroclus safe. When it finally happens, it's almost anticlimactic. It's been building in between them for so long, steadily building pressure, that Achilles expects them to explode at any moment. Instead, they're washing clothes in the river, something they've done 1,000 times before. And Patroclus snorts.
"You have soap in your hair," he teases, reaching out to swipe it from his braid like he has 1,000 times before.
Achilles grabs his hand and pushes him into the river, which has happened enough times that Patroclus only looks resigned as he's swallowed by the water. Achilles dissolves into peals of laughter, clutching his stomach. He doesn't notice Patroclus surfaced behind him, so he's not expecting it when he's grabbed around the waist and dunked under the water. Now it's Patroclus who's laughing at him, and Achilles is going to have to redo his hair, and he spent all morning combing and weaving flowers into it. He glares and pushes against the water to tackle Patroclus to the ground. He stumbles a few steps before falling back into the soft sand, half on the shore and half still in the river. "Lady Achilles, you wound me," he calls, but he's grinning. Achilles falls on top of him, smirking at Patroclus's pained groan at his weight. They're both soaking wet, and he brackets Patroclus's hips with his thighs, grabbing his wrists and pinning them into the sand. Patroclus is much stronger than him, could push him off at any moment, but he doesn't. Achilles hadn't meant for this to happen, had meant to tickle him or perhaps shove mud into his face. But instead, he trapped Patroclus beneath him, and beautiful and wet, and Achilles can feel his every exhale. "Don't hate me for this," he says and leans down. The first press of their lips is tentative, unsure. Then Patroclus strains into it, hungry, like he wants to swallow Achilles whole. Achilles has kissed a lot of men before, but none of them were Patroclus. None of them made his whole body feel like it was on fire, made him feel like he was losing his mind and falling through the heavens all at once. Patroclus rolls them over, so now he's the one pinning Achilles into the sand. He's painfully earnest when he cups Achilles' cheek and says, "I could never hate you. I love you far too much." They don't end up getting the washing done. War is awful. Achilles isn't suited to it, and he doesn't like it, but he fights during those long years of the war. Continues going where mortal men would fear to go, for he is no mortal man. Patroclus is there by his side, in his bed, and the only times he feels normal, feels human, is when his lover's arms are around him. Then Patroclus is killed. There's no container for Achilles' grief, for his rage. He kills 1,000 men with his bare hands, begging for death, looking for it. If he can't be with Patroclus, then he has no reason to live at all. The war rages on around him, and he fights, but he doesn't care. Let the Trojans win. Let the Greeks win. He doesn't care. He did this to himself to protect his lover, and now he's gone and nothing matters anymore. None of this matters anymore. He's bathing in a river, closing his eyes against the tidal wave of grief that threatens to overwhelm him at every moment, when a familiar voice says, "I told you he would die. All things die." "You didn't say it would be so soon," he says, turning to look at Apollo, sitting at the river's edge, radiant in a way a mortal never could be. "I failed to save him and lost myself in the process." "You did save him," Apollo says. "There are things that are worse than death. Patroclus would have faced a fate worse than death if you hadn't been there. Never forget that." He looks down at his body. Perfect. Not a single scar. He'd never gotten one before the war and obviously didn't get any after. "I want to die. All I want is to die." "Paris will shoot you with an arrow tomorrow, and you will go to the underworld," he says. "I could stop that arrow. You don't have to let it take you." Achilles pulls himself to shore and grabs Apollo by the jaw. It's like holding a star in his hands. Make sure that arrow flies true, Apollo. Have all 12 of the gods bless it and send me from this cursed plane, where I exist and Patroclus does not. Apollo looks sad, and in the next moment, he's gone. He's hit in the heel by an arrow the next day, and he feels a tug, and he's gone. This was not death, simply an escape. He's standing by the edge of the river Styx once more, and its goddess is there, wet eyes and wringing hands. "Kill me," he demands. "I cannot," she says, and she's weeping once more. "You're of my river, and my river is the place between life and death. Neither can truly touch you." "Is this the price I pay, then?" he asks. "To be of life and death, and able to experience neither?" "Partially," she whispers. And before he can question her, Hades, king of the underworld, appears at her side. He falls to his knees, mouth open and eyes wide. The sheer weight of Hades' power threatens to crush him, to steal the air from his lungs. It makes his eyes burn. He can suddenly see too much. He suddenly knows too much. "What are you?" he breathes, because he's stood before Zeus himself and he's never felt anything like this. Hades smiles. It looks sad. Why did gods keep looking sad when they see him? "You can feel it now. You can feel so many things now. We need someone like you, someone who is of Styx, who can cross the barrier of both worlds and be affected by neither." "I don't understand," he says. Hades cups his face in his hands and kisses each of his eyelids. "Wait for me and take care of her. I'm depending on you." That doesn't make any sense. He still doesn't understand. But Hades' power concentrates, and the power of time exists within his hands. "There are no more gods of time," he says, "because they died out long ago, with Gaia and the other first gods."
"What is death but the end of time?"
Hades asks. Achilles doesn't get a chance to answer before Hades pushes him, hands pressing against his chest and making him glow with the god's power before he goes crashing into Styx's river. He tries to swim to the surface, but instead it feels like he's sinking for an eternity. Then he finally breaks the surface like he's fallen out the other side. He's gasping as he pulls himself to shore, soaked and shivering, and he collapses onto the sand. He's exhausted, and he can't explain why.
"What are you doing here? No one is supposed to be here."
A voice that sounds almost familiar asks. He looks up, and a toddler is crouched at his side, looking no more than 2, although her eyes are far wiser. She has black skin and gray eyes and hair.
"Styx? Is that my name?" she asks, sucking her thumb in her mouth. "Will do, I suppose."
He looks around, but everything more than 12 feet from the river is blurred around the edges. Like, this river is the only solid thing here. It gives him a headache to look around too long. "Where are we? Where's everything else?"
"There is nothing else," she says. "Nothing's died yet. We're at the beginning."
"Of what?" he asks, although he feels like he already knows the answer.
"Everything," she answers, then frowns.
She rips a piece of cloth from her cloak and wraps it around his eyes, so he's plunged into darkness. He raises his hand to pull it away, but she grabs at his wrist, stopping him.
"You see too much. You have to not look, otherwise it will drive you mad."
"Okay, I won't look." All at once he understands, and he almost wants to laugh. All of them are acting like this was the worst thing that could happen, and they were wrong. This is manageable. It's something he can endure because there's a light at the end of this tunnel. She climbs into his lap and snuggles into him, and he dares not think about how long she's been here. She says this is the beginning, but is it really? Or is it just back far enough to do the trick? He's going to have a lot of time on his hands, but he really has to do his best not to think on that. Otherwise, he will drive himself insane. She asks, "If I'm Styx, what are you?" He nearly says Achilles, but catches himself. He knows better. "You can call me Karen," he says. "I'm going to ferry people across your river one day. We're going to be very good friends, I think." Styx grabs his arm and pulls it around her like a blanket, and he doesn't stop her. He is to be the eternal boatman who ferries the souls of the dead to the underworld. One day, Hades will show up to claim the underworld, and then the real work will begin. Until then, he just has to care for Styx and watch the world slowly age. Not all hope is lost. Patroclus died. One day, he'll have his lover return to him. He just has to wait. Is all. "This is foolish," he snaps, anger making his arms shake, making him want to grab something and break it. Patroclus sighs and holds out his hands. "Lady Achilles, please do not be angry with me." "Of course I'm angry," he hisses. "You leave me to court war, and you expect me to be, what, happy? I need not court what is already here." He takes half a step closer, hand still outstretched. "War is coming, and I won't stand idly by as it comes for you." "We'll run," he says desperately. "We'll go somewhere the war can't find us, and live in peace, live together." Patroclus's lips quirk up at the corners. "Lady Achilles, are you asking me to marry you?" "If I were, would you stay?" He will become Patroclus's wife this very night if it would convince him to stay by his side, to stay safe. Patroclus shakes his head. "I have to do this. I have to go to war, and you must promise me to stay here, away from danger. It is my duty to protect you and my desire to protect you, because I love you more dearly than anything, including my own life." "You mustn't," he insists, finally stepping closer enough that Patroclus can settle his hands on his waist. "You can't throw your life away, because it's precious to me. You can't die, and you must return to me. If you're going to do this against my protest, those are the rules." "If I promise to return to you, will you wait for me?" Patroclus murmurs, ducking his head down until they're almost kissing. Achilles closes the space between them, pressing their mouths together with a desperation he hasn't felt in years, trying to pour all of his complicated, messy love into the kiss, so that Patroclus has no reason to doubt him. "I'd spend an eternity waiting, if it meant having you back in my arms."